Hello, and welcome to show number 2426 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Welcome to the Miner's Alley Playhouse and this production of The Full Monty. The audience is sitting on three sides of the stage. And the libretto for this musical was written by Terrence McNally with a score by David Yazbek. This Americanized musical stage version is adapted from the 1997 British film of the same name. So six unemployed Buffalo steelworkers, low on both cash and prospects, decide to present a strip act at a local club after they see their wives' enthusiasm for a touring company of Chippendales. As they prepare for the show, working through their fears, self-consciousness, and anxieties, they overcome their inner demons and they find strength in their camaraderie.
And that is a little bit from today's guest, who just might be the voice in your ear if you go to an audio-described program.
We'll talk with Amy Ogden, an audio-describer for live theater and ballet. She shares insights from her training and highlights the importance of precise descriptions and supplementary background material in enhancing the live performance experience. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Amy Ogden.
I guess my hot tip would be for anyone listening is, I do say this at the end, I will go standby coat check or wherever they check out their devices. I would love feedback, and especially feedback of how I can improve is the most helpful. I mean, it's really nice to hear compliments too, but feedback of, you know, I didn't understand when you said this, or I heard people chuckle and I didn't quite catch why they chuckled. I don't know that you noted it. That is super helpful to me. So feedback to the audio describer is helpful, and feedback to the theaters, the patrons giving feedback to those theaters saying, you know, you need to offer this. This changes theater for an awful lot of patrons. And I've even heard that it can change theater sometimes for people a little bit on the autism spectrum, or especially for children seeing ballet the first time. Audio description moves the story along in a way that can kind of help a child really understand the story. So it can be used in many ways and helpful to many people.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
ListenLater.net, an online service that transforms articles, documents, and blog posts into podcast episodes using AI with human-like narration. These episodes are accessible in any podcast app. More information is at ListenLater.net.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Amy.
Last week, we talked with some representatives from the Miners Alley Performing Arts Center about their audio-described performances and how that all got started. Today, we'll be talking with the person who actually does those audio descriptions. So, Amy, perhaps you can introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Amy Ogden, and I've been doing this about 2.5-3 years. So I'm fairly new to audio description. I've done some other things in the past, and in college did a little bit of radio and theater. And just I had friends who literally would say, can you come to my office and record our our voicemail for us so it sounds professional? And that's kind of what led me to start thinking of maybe using my voice in a way that can help others. Yeah, and with my interest in theater, it all kind of came together really in a nice, neat package to become an audio describer for live theater.
And you do other things with your voice as well, right?
I've done about 230 video intros for the National Park Service. They have a tribal legacy project for Native tribes, and they had well over 1,000 videos they needed intros to. So there was a team of about a dozen of us working our way for many months to get all of those done.
Audio description is kind of a specialized niche for voice actors. I'm wondering how you found out about it and how you got into it initially.
Actually, it's a story just like so many people find their jobs. I knew someone, and it was my sister, who had a blind friend who was at a dinner, and Bonnie Barlow was there and explaining what she did for a living and that she trained people. And my sister the next day called and said, "Oh, yeah, I don't know if you're looking to get back into the workforce right now, but have I got a job I think would be perfect for you, because you can kind of control your hours. You are helping others. You're making some money and you're using your voice, and all under the umbrella of theater." She's like, "It sounds perfect for you." And I read up on it and I could not have agreed more. And that's how I got started.
And you do this at many venues around Colorado, not just Miner's Alley.
Correct. Yes. Yes. I do Miner's Alley Playhouse in Golden, but also Colorado Ballet. I do their seasons. They are at the L.A. Calkins at Denver Center of the Performing Arts. I do several different shows at the Denver Center of the Performing Arts with about four other describers. They've got about five of us that they rotate, because obviously they get just dozens and dozens of shows. I do all of Performance Now Theater Company. They perform at the Lakewood Cultural Center, and I do all the season of Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center at Colorado College.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is audio description from the perspective of the describer. What we heard earlier was Amy's introduction to the performance before anything got started. And then, because there's so much noise when the curtain goes up, she went on to describe the setting of the initial scene.
There are signs from all around Buffalo, New York, hanging on the walls above the audience, such as Bryant Street, United Steelworkers of America, Giordano's, and then there is an illuminated poster featuring a glistening torso of a hard-bodied male stripper in extremely short shorts, and the words, "Girls' Night, Girls' Night, Girls' Night," featuring Buddy Keno Walsh, right over the torso.
Well, Amy, in the introduction, we talked a little bit about the intricacies involved in audio description, and I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got trained to do this.
I was trained by Bonnie Barlow. She is out of Denver. She's been doing it for 20 years and has written and recorded for not just live theater, but Netflix, entire television seasons, you name it. And at the end of that training, she actually went a step further and helped her students secure work in the field, which was life-changing. And you can go online and you can think you're being trained and you can pour your money into something and not have it be the real deal. So finding the real deal to get trained to do a job like this is super important.
And what did the training actually entail?
I was given, here's a scene out of Wicked. I want you to describe it. Bonnie would say, "I'm going to check it." And then she would critique it. There was a lot of explaining exactly what a blind person wants when they go to a theater performance. And they don't want you to tell them what an actor is feeling. So you don't want to tell them Bart is angry. You know, you want to explain Bart grimaces, balls his fists, and paces. He pounds his fists into the pillows of the sofa. Because that's what the people in the audience, the sighted members, are seeing. And they're then interpreting, he's upset, he's angry. So that's what you give a blind patron. They don't need to be told Bart's upset. That's not giving them an equitable experience to what a sighted patron is getting.
Part of the training, I suppose, is what do people want to hear? What's appropriate descriptions? I mean, there are sometimes discussions about how detailed should you get? What kind of impression should you leave with the people? Because, you know, you always leave some sort of impression.
Right, right. And matching your tone and tempo to the scene. I'll do a little bit of voice acting in that. I definitely don't describe Les Mis with a perky voice. You know, I match the tone of what is happening on stage. And I will even find myself crying in the booth when Gavroche dies. Every time.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's knowing your audience. When I am describing Nutcracker for a school child, I'm going to talk very differently than I would talk to adults viewing the Nutcracker. And so it's really lovely when I can know who is listening. It helps a great deal.
So how do you straddle the range of preferences? Some blind people, like Pete, likes to listen to the sound effects and the soundtrack, the background music, and not be told, you know, when a door opens, because he's hearing the door open. But a lot of people really want all the detail. How do you straddle that range and make everybody happy?
Oh, I'm sure I don't make everybody happy. I don't know that anyone can. There are, as I said, like the Denver Center of the Performing Arts, they have five describers. I guarantee you, we all five are slightly different. We all five have slightly different tone and tempo. Some of us describe a great deal. I've always said, if I have a crime, it is describing too much or a great deal. I know other describers, they might be told they don't describe enough. So I always tell the patrons, especially ones that say, you know, I've never had audio description, I don't know if I'm going to like it. I say, well, the beauty is you put the earphone in one ear, and if you don't like it, you turn off the device or you pull me back out of your ear. It's a personal preference thing. I'm certainly not offended. But a lot of the patrons that I get repeated feedback from will say, I like that you talk a lot. And because my device is in one ear, so in one ear I am listening to you, and in the other ear I am listening to the show. But a lot of people say that is exactly how they do audio description. And again, you know, there's people, I am sure, that like Pete, who'd prefer to just listen to the show only. And it's just a personal preference thing. But there are an awful lot that say, wow, I really like knowing why everyone gasped. I really like knowing why everyone chuckled. And that's, again, part of the challenge and part of the training is making sure you're telling them when something's getting ready to happen so they can laugh at the same time as the entire rest of the audience, not after the fact.
And I guess the other real art of what you do is being very careful not to squash or step on the lines of the actors as they're saying their parts.
Right. Yes. Hence previewing. And then all of us describers will go home and write our own script for how we want to describe that show and when we want to speak. But absolutely, it ruins it if you're talking right over the lines. That doesn't help anybody.
So tell us a little bit about how you prepare. Do you see some pre-performances and go through that, or you just read the script and you're familiar enough with it to be able to insert your lines? How does it all work?
It definitely varies show to show. Generally, I get the script, I read the script, I put it into my computer and kind of start spacing things out and trying to figure out, you know, what I want to do. I write my intro, I do research, because in my pre-show description, I will often give some background, how this show came about, what was the inspiration for the show, who wrote it, what their background was. A little bit about choreographer. Obviously, if there's a band or an orchestra, I'll list off the instruments you're going to hear in the orchestra are, because some people can pick those out and some people like to know. So again, It's a personal preference. Some people might sit there and think, I don't need to know this. And some people might like to, but that is the information that is also included in the program. So I try to do a little bit of what the sighted patrons are doing, which is sitting there reading the program. And so I give a little bit of that information from the program, but then also some history of and things I've looked up. I really like when a blind patron can leave a show with their friends and the sighted friends are saying, oh, I couldn't believe when this happened. Can you believe how so-and-so looked? What a get up. And I love if I've been able to maybe give something a little extra to a blind patron who can say, well, you know what Victor Hugo was thinking when he wrote that. Just something, a little bonus that maybe the sighted patrons didn't get. I love if I can do that.
That's interesting. I also think it's interesting you talked about reading the program ahead of time. As you mentioned before, I don't typically like a lot of description because I've been blind since birth and being blind is kind of natural to me. So I sort of have my own ways of interpolating what goes on and working that out. Whereas if you lost your vision later in life and you're used to relying on vision, it's not the same thing. But I do rely on Nancy reading me the program brochure ahead of time, and I find that very useful and informative. So that's a nice thing that you do.
Yeah. Again, that was part of the training is, you know, think about their experience and what a sighted patron gets when they go to the theater. And let's try to absolutely give an equitable experience to a blind patron. And that would be reading parts of the program. And I also will note that several theaters with about 2 weeks' notice, they will produce and offer a Braille program. Not all of them have the funds to do this, but I know like Denver Center of the Performing Arts, if they are given a heads up that a patron would like a Braille copy of the program, they don't get to keep it because it is incredibly labor-intensive to produce one of those, from my understanding, but they will have that for them.
Well, that's very nice because some people like to just read to themselves instead of relying on somebody else reading to them.
Right, right, exactly.
Now, the actors in the play, they go through many practices before putting on the real performance. Do you get to do that to get your timing to fit within their timing and everything? Or how does that work? You don't do it fresh first time when you're describing the performance, do you?
Yes, pretty much. And that's what most of us do. The time is so tight often that you preview and then it's pretty labor intensive just to write your own script and find the words you want to use to describe the show. And I know I can say 4 syllables per second and trying to get that timing right so I am not stepping on things. And then boom, before you know it, you're at the show.
Do you make a recording of the performance that you've watched so that you know how many seconds it's going to be between this and that?
No. One of the things that you're also taught when you're trained, and I've asked for confirmation on this from blind patrons, and many of them say, again, yes, because we pretty much kind of can listen to both things at once, is you can talk over a note that is being carried a very long time at a musical, over the chorus. Once people know the words that are being repeated over and over, you can speak over that. And if there's something real pertinent and important happening on stage, a lot of them say, yes, please give that information so we have that in a timely manner. We know what's happening on stage vocally. And sometimes the timing isn't perfect. And so I'll be mid-sentence and I will pause because I do not want to talk over an actor. And then when they're done, I try to finish my sentence real quickly and my description very quickly. Obviously, the longer you're at it, the better you get at doing it.
It sounds like a lot of preparation and work must go into putting each of these together. Can you give us some appreciation for the time involved?
I am not exaggerating when I say hours. I mean hours. And I'm one that is there thinking, oh, I don't like that word. I don't want to say it that way. What is a better word? What's a more descriptive word? Oh, what's one that has fewer syllables. And it's a lot of just searching for the most succinct way to say something. And then finding that what's the perfect time to say it. And it's hours of getting that. And again, I lay out my script completely different than other audio describers. I don't know that any of us do it the same way. We have been shown different ways, but my script, I literally follow the entire show script because I don't want to miss a cue. And I write my cues in between those lines where I know I want to talk.
You're reading along as the play is going on.
I absolutely am. Yes.
And the whole time you're sitting somewhere outside the main theater so that you can have a light on so you can read the script and you can talk and you're not disrupting the rest of the audience.
Right. Yes. And so sometimes I'm getting a live feed on a screen, a video screen, and I'm talking into a mic and then it's going into their ears. Other times I'm in a booth watching the performance live. When I do Colorado Ballet, I'm five stories up, way, way up high, where some of the spotlights are and where the catwalks are and the Figaro screen is. And I'm way up there squinting down, and I'm describing from that vantage point. It's just what works best for the theaters, where they can best place us.
You said you also describe ballet. And in live theater, much of the time is occupied with the performers talking. In ballet, there's typically no other speech besides you. Do you wind up talking for the duration of the piece?
I do talk an awful lot because I'm, of course, describing the scene. But I also have taken cues from the people who run the ballet who said, you know, what we really wish you would do is explain the movements, but then also give the actual French terms for the dance. I had to learn the names of ballet steps, dozens of them. And so because there's a lot of people who go to the ballet who have lost their sight. So they used to go to the ballet and see the ballet. Now they go and they know when someone says someone has done a cabriole or a grand jeté, they know what that looks like. But in order to help all members of the audience, I'll say something like, Cheryl does a grand jeté. That is the big leap. Yeah, so I describe it in both ways. So for people who don't know what a grand jeté is, the big leap. And I'll define them at the beginning of the show during the intro as well. But I will kind of touch on it throughout the show. Yeah. And try not to drown out any of the beautiful music as well. So I try to stay away from the crescendos and some of the dramatic music as much as I can.
I would never have thought of someone describing ballet because it sounds like there's so much going on and a lot of complexity. So I really applaud you for doing that. That must be something.
It's I love it.
Well, I imagine the radio announcers at basketball games, you know, there's constantly something happening and they talk end to end, nonstop. But there are nuances in ballet that I don't see in basketball.
The thought of describing basketball, that sounds a lot more terrifying because I do get the luxury of previewing the shows, take a lot of notes, and I would not be able to just off the cuff do an exquisite job of describing ballet steps. I would trip over myself for sure because sometimes it moves so quickly. So being able to preview and take notes is key to giving an accurate and smooth description.
Well, it sounds like you really enjoy doing what you're doing. Thanks for the job you do.
You really have to love what you're doing because for me, it's a lot of driving and it's a lot of hours and it's a lot of sitting at a computer and typing. But I do love theater and I have met the nicest people working in the theaters, at the patrons. I would love feedback, especially feedback of how I can improve.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about audio description services and how to contact Amy Ogden.
Well, Amy, I understand that you have a mailing list for patrons who are interested in going to Described Audio. Can you tell people how to get onto your mailing list?
I would happily do that. And I also will list out even Audio Describe shows, not only what I'm doing, but my fellow describers. If I know shows they're doing, I'll list them because, hey, it's all the Denver metro area and down into Colorado Springs. It's just my name, Amy Ogden. So AmyOgden90@gmail.com. If someone drops me a line, I will add them to that mailing list and make sure they know when shows are happening. That, you know, because people will do a show and they'll run a show for a month, but there's only usually one, sometimes two, audio described performances.
And I suppose if other theater companies around Colorado want to avail themselves of your services, they can also email you at that address?
Absolutely. There is a six, I think, in the Denver area. And if one of us can't do a show, we call on the others and try and get each other to cover. We really do try to work together to make sure that if there's a need for an audio described show, it doesn't go undescribed.
Just to let you know, people at Miners Alley do listen to you. When we talked with the other Amy the other day, she just raved about how well you fit into the story. And, you know, she just nestled in and listened to it. And it was all seamless. She had very good things to say.
That is nice. I think that all of the theaters I work with do listen. I really do. And so that is fantastic. And I am just in love with everyone. Amy and Lisa and everyone at Miners Alley, they are fantastic. And they think so above and beyond. I mean, they'll stop and think about what should we do for people bringing a seeing eye dog. And we're doing Misery, and it's going to be have loud moments, and that could disturb the dogs. And let's think of options for maybe we could have a place the dogs could be when they're not, you know, when the theater's loud. Maybe we should have them outside. And I mean, they think of things that are just, I always tell them, you are so above and beyond anything I even would have imagined. They're amazing. They really are.
So it's a team effort.
Well, they are amazing. I will just say they really are. And I'm very proud and honored to work with them.
Great. In case you missed any of that in the audio, you can just click on the show notes for episode number 2426, which is this episode, and you can find it all right there, all at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Lucy Edwards, a British influencer, disability activist, and journalist. We'll talk with Lucy about her new book called Blind Not Broken, in which she shares her inspiring journey of adapting to vision loss as a teenager, her struggles, triumphs, and how she emerged successful and content.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we hope to catch you all next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.